Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
It's Mail It In Friday.
I'm called in sick. I don't work in the rain.
Boy, I kind of mailed that in.
You can't deliver mail?
Why not?
Yeah, whatever.
I guess you're right. It's just walking around putting it in the boxes.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Your favorite topic?
No. Unfortunately, Scotty, and this is dead serious, that the news is something that you should try to, as a human, be like informed, but it's just, it's garbage after garbage. I mean, this is obviously a wedding, but there's stuff going on. Once again today, it's...
Right. Yeah.
I am sick of hashtag pray for. It's just time and time again, there's garbage going on. And I don't know. I know you got a little nephew. I got three kids. I just wonder what the hell kind of world they're going to be living in when they're 30 years old.
That's the thing. And you can only hope it gets better. And you and I aren't paid to figure out how.
No.
And we definitely don't have the answers.
I'll tell you what, when we sort all that out, I have an issue that I need to sort out. People, you live in a condo, right?
I live in a condo, my man.
Are you not, like, do neighbors understand how to close a door quietly? Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you have door slammers?
I don't have door slammers, but our doors don't slam. They're on a hinge up top.
So they automatically slow down. I'm being haunted by my neighbors.
You have slammable doors.
Oh, yeah. It's just like you walk out and just slam, 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 slam. I'm going to do an instructional video and post it on my condo's website on how to close a door properly. And there's people that run errands, and it's like slam once and then slam again 2 minutes later. It's a gong show.
You got to do the passive-aggressive thing where you start posting pieces of paper, like flyers, on the wall next to the elevator or
Dude,
something.
Dude, I already did that for the garbage, the pigs that leave the garbage on the floor. I wrote a note, two notes. You pigs on this floor that leave your garbage on the floor and don't put it in the chute, stop it. This is ridiculous. Our buddy lives down on the Queens Quay, I think. He probably knows about this stuff.
Joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline, 2 hours away from a baseball game, so we better not waste his time. Blue Jays pitching coach Pete Walker is here. Pete, your condo, is it loud or do you live in peace?
I live in peace. It's quiet. It's quiet there, and there's definitely no garbage outside the doors or in the hallway or by the chute, so everybody puts their garbage in the chute.
Yeah, like, can you imagine, Pete, like, going into the area and people just say, they throw it on the floor and say, somebody else pick it up. I want to do a sting operation.
Sure they have surveillance cameras.
That's the other thing, too. You start walking down the hall, some of those condos, and on the first floor, you can smell garbage on the first floor. That is like red flag.
That's not where I live.
A red flag. A red flag if I'm ever going to move in that building. You're here on a day where another one of your starting pitchers goes on the disabled list, Jaime Garcia. Yeah. When it rains, it pours, man. I mean, how frustrating is this just generally, given the underperformance of the rotation so far and now the injuries are starting to rack up?
Yeah, it's obviously frustrating, but you know what? It's a long year. I've been doing this for 27 years and obviously with the Blue Jays for a little bit. So it's been a tough start for the rotation. The bullpen obviously has picked up the slack. We got some guys at the front office picked up who've been tremendous. Has really helped to get to this point. We're still 500. We think our best baseball is definitely ahead of us from a pitching standpoint. J-Hap certainly is throwing the ball well, and hopefully Estrada tonight can get that going as well. There's been some holes in that rotation, certainly a couple of injuries, but you know we're going to find a way to get through it, and that's baseball. It doesn't always come easy, that's for sure. And right now it's a difficult time, but it's something that we got to continue to work towards, and obviously stay positive, and as pitchers find a way to get it done, and that's what we have to do at this point.
What do you believe about the Garcia injury? Is this a 10-day deal, or could it linger?
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be short. There's some inflammation he's been battling. He's a veteran. He's been around a long time, obviously, and had a nice track record. Some good years in St. Louis for sure. So, you know, we're expecting him to get back, you know, hopefully quick. And, you know, maybe this little break helps him get over that hump. You know, when you're fighting through something, you're having a tough time commanding the ball like you want to and finish pitches, you know, it's difficult out there. So, you know, hopefully this mini break here, you know, gets him a chance to knock that inflammation out. And, you know, I think he'll be back quickly. Hopefully it's just one start. And, you know, hopefully it gets him over the hump to get him rolling, to pitch up to his capabilities and where he should be.
Pete, you've been around the game a long time, and there's been a lot of progress made in the fitness aspect and sports science. You must find it frustrating as a coach to look at these players, how good a shape they're in, and the amount of injuries that mount up. It's like, I mean, I was an old school hockey player, and I always said you can't pull a fat muscle. It's not happening. But these guys are so well conditioned, and to see so many go down at one time, it must be frustrating.
It is frustrating. I mean, certainly, you know, a couple of years ago, we didn't have that issue. You know, we were relatively, you know, injury free in that rotation, and it was obviously paid dividends. But, you know, it's just what you have to deal with. And obviously, there are a lot of things that these players have nowadays, from a strength conditioning component, nutrition, everything else. And you know, it's there for them, and obviously, it's going to make them better. But still, you know, there are injuries in baseball, mm-hmm. and it's just you know, it's something you got to deal with, and you can't really. Sometimes it's hard to pinpoint why and where it happened or where it went wrong. But you know, the main thing is we got to find a way to get through it and get these guys back. Get Stroman back soon and Garcia back soon and pitching up to their capabilities, feeling good. It's tough enough to compete at the major league level when you're 100%. So when you're 80-90% scuffling through some, it's not easy. And especially when you go through a little bit of a struggle, it's magnified. So you know, we need these guys. We need them to win, no doubt. You know, the other guy's going to pick up the slack in the meantime. You know, the Biaginis and Gaviglio tomorrow as well, and we need them to step up. And that's professional sports. You know, it gives sometimes somebody has a little bit of a blip or an injury, and it gives somebody else an opportunity to step up and show what they can do. So we're expecting those guys to get in there and to give us an opportunity to win a ball game.
Jays and A's play game two of a 4-game series down at the Dome tonight. Blue Jays pitching coach Pete Walker with us on Overdrive.
Pete, you mentioned that Marcus Stroman obviously hasn't had the start that he's envisioned, and
right.
You know, he's battling an injury right now. A lot of it, when you look at your role, obviously you go over video, you go over mechanics. Sure. As a pitching coach, do you have to go through the mental aspect as well with your pitchers?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you touch on just about every aspect of the game, and obviously the mental part of baseball is huge, any sport as well. So, you know, you look at some mechanical things that could be affecting performance, but also, you know, trying to stay positive and have a good game plan and be able to handle adversity and all those things. And that's what you do in this game. And over time, you learn how to deal with it. As coaches, we've certainly been through it, so you try to pass that knowledge along, and sometimes players have to go through it themselves in order to really truly understand it. And you know, so you can, it's like preaching to the choir sometimes. You know what you say, and they hear it, but until they live it, they don't quite understand it. And so, you know, it's just one of those things. It's what we do as coaches, and year in and year out. And you know, but the main thing is, you know, the physical part of the game. You know, you want to get these guys feeling good, and it certainly makes everything else much easier to handle those tougher situations.
Pete, our buddy Steve Phillips is doing a piece on SportsCenter tonight, and he's outlining some examples of ways that Marcus's mechanics have changed just a little bit, at least to
right.
his eye,
sure.
Identifying that on video. My question for you is more to do with the reason why. Is that
right.
Marcus getting out of his delivery? And you know, he likes to fiddle around with different leg kicks and different,
sure.
the quick pitch and all that. Or
yeah.
is there a physical issue here? And are you worried that it could be a while?
Yeah, no, I hope it's not a while. I don't think it will be a while. I mean, he wasn't 100%, that's for sure, but it wasn't far off. You know, but his slot certainly has changed. You know, he's underneath the ball a little bit more at times. He's fighting his delivery, trying to get a little more flow in his delivery. You know, we changed his glove and trying to get a little bit more momentum out of it. So it's certainly, you know, sometimes the physical can lead to some mechanical adjustments and changes, and you don't want that. Or, you know, you want to get back to the form that he had last year. But sometimes the body won't let you. So, you know, hopefully this break gets that shoulder inflammation completely out of there. We can get back to that good release point, the good delivery, his timing, all those things tend to fall back into place. But certainly, you know, the arm issue, a little bit of the shoulder issue there, affected his delivery and got him into a, a difficult position. So, you know, that's where we're at. We acknowledged it. He acknowledged it, and he's getting some treatment right now, and we're hopeful that he'll be back and back to the old Marcus Stroman. That's what I anticipate anyway.
Pete, we know that Roberto Osuna's having a legal issue right now, and there's no sense of when he may return to the team.
Sure.
So you have to move on, right, at least for the time being, without him. How do you go about doing that? Does somebody earn the ninth inning role with repeated strong performances, or is it just kind of match it up as it goes?
Well, match it up as it goes, but certainly Clifford's been strong. He's handled that position before. He's certainly the guy that we've gone to a few different times in as soon as absence. You know, Ryan Teperica certainly fits that ninth inning. John Axford's been an incredible, pleasant surprise, I guess, based on his year last year and what he's done this year and a couple of adjustments that he's made. So we have some guys that are certainly capable of pitching the ninth inning, but it's a matter of getting there. And so if we need to use Clipper in the seventh or the eighth in a key situation or Tepera in that inning, we'll do the same. So I think it's a little bit of matchup. Ideally, you know, you get a guy like Clipper who has experience and can pitch that ninth inning would be ideal. But seriously, the way that bullpen's responded this year and the numbers they put up, and we could go with just about any one of those guys and feel pretty good about it. So it's been a luxury. Like I said, the front office did a great job bringing in those guys in, especially late in camp, and it's been a definite shot in the arm for the staff. And they've all done it. They've all done a fantastic job down there holding the fort.
Yeah, and I think of your 22 wins, the bullpen has 11 of them, which is reflective not only of how they've pitched, but the fact that sometimes it seems like a lot. The offense comes to light late in ball games, right?
Correct.
You know,
we've scored some runs late in games, especially early. We were winning a lot of games late, and you know, we got to continue to do that. But obviously, you know, getting off to a better start with our starting pitchers and putting up a few zeros early and getting a few runs on the board makes life a lot easier for us.
What are and this is a bigger picture question, mm-hmm. Pete, that isn't necessarily specific to the Blue Jays, but if we're sitting around and having a conversation about pitching 10, 15 years from now,
sure,
what do you think we're talking about? Are we getting to a point here where a sixth starter is going to get into a rotation? Are we going to get to a point where it's kind of 80 pitches, 5 innings, and 2 times through the order for a starter? Like, where do you think we're going with all this?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's the direction we're going. Certainly, when you look at games and how they're played, how they're managed, the bullpens, the way they're being built, starters are limited, pitch counts and innings. You know, the third time through the order, obviously, the numbers start getting inflated across the board in Major League Baseball for starting pitchers, the average starting pitchers anyway. The elite guys seem to be able to get through that third time through or fourth time through. But certainly, I mean, that seems to be the direction from an analytical standpoint, a statistical standpoint. It makes sense. It's not something that's crazy. It seems evident, you know, if you look at it. But, you know, I don't love it, to be honest with you. You know, I love those starters to get into this at least the sixth, the seventh, the eighth inning on a nightly basis. I think it preserves your bullpen over the course of a season. It keeps those guys strong. They're fresh. I think, you know, the more the bullpen throws earlier in the year, the tougher it's going to be later in the season when you look at workloads and their effectiveness. So, you know, ideally, those starters need to get through that third time through. I think realistically, to have a great opportunity late in the season, into the postseason.
Is velocity king, or could guys in college who throw 87, 88, 89 on their fastball still get drafted down the road? You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, I mean, velocity, obviously, it seems to be a big part of the game. And, you know, more bullpens are loaded down. You see guys coming out, the low guy in the totem pole is 95 in a lot of bullpens. So you see 97, 98, 99, 100s. It's not uncommon to see that with just about every team that comes into town. So certainly velocity is big. Being able to spin the baseball is extremely important. I missed the lost art of pitching, corner to corner, working the edges, changing speeds, the 88 mile an hour sinker, but you don't see that too often anymore. Definitely velocity is a big part of the game. It's, you know, you can pitch up in the zone and certainly get outs at the top part of the zone now, where it's with the launch angles and the guys trying to get underneath the baseball to lift it. So it's a little bit of a different philosophy from a hitting standpoint. So pitchers with velo that can pitch up in the zone can certainly be very effective, and especially late in the ballgame.
What's the reaction been to these new rules limiting any kind of mound visit to like 6? Do people care?
No, I don't think it's made a huge impact. I do think it's changed the way maybe catchers and infielders approach a quick visit. But it really hasn't impacted us as far as being caught late in the game with one or none left. We seem to preserve them. If I have to make a trip, or Gibby or Russ or Luke, obviously we'll make it early in the game, but we try to be efficient with them and not just, you know, not a wasted trip for, it has to have a purpose, whether we're buying time for a reliever, you know, really need to address something with a pitcher. And I think it's made a difference, you know, as far as that, from that standpoint, but it hasn't affected us, so to speak.
Pete, thanks for your time. We'll catch up soon. Yeah. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, you got Pete. It, guys. Take care.
We'll Pitching coach of the Blue Jays, Pete Walker, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com. It's tough being a coach, yeah, when you're watching your guys drop like flies, and then the other guys that you're counting on in the starting rotation not get it done.
Yeah, not playing well. It is, because you have no control once they get out there. You feel like a parent watching your child out there, because you try and shape them, you try and... That's why in talking to a lot of coaches at any level, the frustration, you see them at the start in any season, nicely groomed, you know, the hair is nice and dark, if you got dark hair. End of the season, they're like haggard, gray hair and frustrated.
Training, training staff comes under the gun too, because they're like, why the hell are my guys all getting hurt?
Yeah.
Yeah. When everyone, when you're not having success, everyone's under the microscope.
This is the thing. This is the thing, guys, and you know me, I'm a baseball guy, so I'm bringing this to the table. This is what's killing me, and you've heard me rant and rave about Vlad Guerrero Jr. I'm going to set that aside for a second. The thing that is frying my ass about this season is the fact that it's like we've all just decided how it's going to be. They're not good enough. Now they're starting to lose guys who are important to them, and it's like a foregone conclusion that at some point Josh Donaldson is going to be traded.
Right.
So, well, it's May 18th.
Yeah.
Like, you got 4.5 months of baseball left. You play every single day.
I know. Steve Phillips said that's the tough thing about baseball, man.
When you're crap and you decide to move on from pieces, it's like, okay.
But it'd be
you're
one
saying
thing,
to your fan base, good luck coming to the Rogers Center for 4 months.
But it would be one thing if they were crap like they were last year, or like the Orioles are this year, where you're 14 games under 500 already, and you could say to the fan base, well, we've got to, like the Orioles have to trade Manny Machado here. He's 26 years old, going to make $300+ million probably on a free agent contract that he signs, and they're not going to keep him because their owner won't pay anybody anything. You can sell that now. Well, we got to get something for this guy because they're done.
Right.
The Jays are still in this wishy-washy, they got off to a good start, so they're hanging around type thing.
But does a knowledgeable baseball fan believe that the Jays can get that last wild card spot?
Well, this is why I'm yelling and screaming about Vlad Guerrero. Because the arguments that keep coming my way have to do with service time, which I totally understand. This is one of those weird political arguments, Jamie, where you can have logical opinions on both sides that actually aren't
it's not necessarily
wrong.
Yeah.
The problem is you just can't meet in the middle. My theory is, because one of the things I hear a lot is, well, you got to open up third base for Vlad if you're going to bring him up. So you trade Donaldson. You don't leave Donaldson in limbo. And I'm saying, I want to see those two, and it won't solve the pitching problems that they're having, but I want to see those two in the middle of the order together.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in this position here right now where you're kind of teetering, maybe that guy comes in. He can't be the savior, but he might inject a little life into the middle of the order. He's another bat who's going to do damage. He's not going to be Kendrys Morales and roll over on a fastball and hit into a double play to end a threat.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's hitting the hell out of the baseball. Get him in there, and maybe you win a game or two or three that you wouldn't otherwise win.
Right.
And maybe that win or two or three a little bit later on keeps you in the race or close to it, as opposed to just falling flat.
It helps
That's my argument.
It helps you get to a level where you know exactly what your team is. Now, I'll go on the other side, is if they believe that the team is just not that good, and they may not want to place him in a situation where, like, there's no guarantee he comes up to the majors and has instant success, so they try to shield him a little bit at 19 years old. I believe he's 19,
yes,
right?
And doesn't turn 20 until next year.
Right. So everyone believes, and young athletes can handle that type of duress these days. Like, it's not, at any level, any sport, young athletes are a lot more progressive than when Jeff and I were playing. Like, Jeff was an outlier playing in the NHL at his age. It wasn't the norm. Now you're seeing high draft picks play right away in hockey.
It's almost expected now.
It is expected.
And a lot of that has to do, too, with the cap, right?
The
fact you're on rookie deals.
Yeah, you're force-feeding young guys in, but the contracts help that.
Whereas in baseball, it's a little different because you're trying to buy that seventh year of service time as you're presumably getting into your prime at 25, right. 26, 27.
I get it. It's a responsible move from a general manager, but the fan base is frustrated. You can tell. Like, you talk to Jays fans around, they're like, okay, we don't have a lot to migrate as far as positive news. You know, the team is treading along, but it's almost like you know this guy's coming. Well, when is it? When is it? And the other thing you mentioned, Donaldson trade. Like, if that is the elephant in the room as well, like, when's that going to happen? Is it going to be closer to the deadline? Or
yeah, well, but, and that's my point, is if you get Vladdy up here and maybe he's another threat in the middle of the order who does some damage and you win some games, maybe you don't trade Donaldson. Maybe right. You make a run for it.
But does Donaldson, where would Vladdy slot as far as, not in the order, but would he play third base? Yeah, positionally.
I think there are days you could get Donaldson off his feet and DH him. You could throw Vladdy at third. I think there are days you could get Justin Smoke off his feet. And I know Vladdy hasn't played a lot of first base. When he was a kid, he was an outfielder. And it is a lot to ask a 19-year-old who hasn't done a lot of outfield work in the minor leagues to come up and play big right. league baseball outfield. But that is his natural position out in left field from when he was a kid. I'd get his bat into the order and worry about that stuff later,
yeah,
you know. But it's, I just, and you can never make a decision based off of the fan base or what people want. And I'm trying to make rational, logical baseball arguments for getting this guy up here.
Right.
But the emotional side of the equation for me, as somebody who's pretty passionate about this and covered the team very closely for a while, mm-hmm. is that 3 years ago, Troy Tulowitzki and David Price hadn't arrived. This so-called renaissance of baseball in this city and this country isn't even 3 years old. And the vibe down at the Dome, at least coming through the TV when I watch, or the odd time I go down to the park still, feels like it's 2014 again. Yeah. It's just like,
it's dropped off.
Oh, it's the Yankees and Red Sox. Here we go.
You remember their lineup. It was so... It was Donaldson, it was Bautista, Encarnacion, like, Tulowitzki.
It was Murderer's Row.
Yeah, yeah, and they would just blitz team. And now you're looking, like for me, Scotty, I'm looking and I'm like, I find myself doing this a lot.
Who
is that guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to saying, okay, watch this gong show right here. They're going to be up 5-0 after 4. It's, who is that guy?
Yeah. And I mean, I said it, and I stand by it. I think some of the moves that the front office made in the offseason were interesting, like, and I mean that positively because it can be taken negatively, were interesting moves for kind of bit pieces that could bridge them to some of their kids. But then you get out of the gate so strongly, and mm-hmm. feels like a bit of a tease, and I don't know. I mean, the problem is, guys, we always say how there are 5 playoff spots in the American League. Well, really, there are 3. The Blue Jays can't win the American League Central, and they can't win the American League West. Their right. 3 options are the AL East or one of the 2 wild cards. Right. And it looks like with the Yankees and Red Sox, one of those is wrapped up, and you got the Astros and the Angels out West. The Central is crap. Cleveland's a 500 team right now, and they're in first place, and they get to beat up on the crap White Sox, the crap Royals, the underperforming Twins, yeah. and the Tigers, who've actually outperformed expectations because they're supposed to be a 95-100 loss team when it's all said and done. So, you know,
yeah, it's
there. You go.
It is. It's a. It's not. It's not a good feeling if you're a Jays fan right now. You're in limbo.
We'll get Dave Poulin into studio.
Yeah, Pooley will come in.
Flip the script. Do a little hockey. It's Game 4, Jets and Vegas from Sin City tonight, and we'll get into the Caps and Lightning as well. That series is tied at 2 apiece in a roadie series so far. Pooley joins us in studio. It's Overdrive. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Noodles and the O-Dog. TSN 1050. Always a good idea to be dining in the middle of the show. My throat.
That happened to me the other day.
My throat always catches.
We had chicken fingers in here. That was probably last Friday, was it? And I, like, the chicken finger had, like, it was breaded and had a flake, and I swallowed it the wrong way. And I was choking.
It doesn't happen for you a lot because pig face you work with eats all the food.
there's nothing I hate, and it happens every now and then, but there's nothing I hate more in radio than being mid-sentence and you're just talking and happens. It's just...
I thought I was looking up and seeing your producer munching on your food.
Like my producer can come to me after a three-hour show and say, that was pretty good, and like it was a pretty good show, and that one throat catch will affect my entire...
Which is why he eats your food.
Yeah. So that would be just one of the reasons.
He's got like a homing beacon. Like wherever he is in this building, if we have like pizza delivered or something, all of a sudden he knows. He just comes out of the wall. Like he just arrives.
It's like he levitates.
The day that Brian brought in...
No, he's a pig. He smells food and he goes through it.
The day that Brian brought in that lasagna, it was like... He didn't open the door and walk out from the producers behind the glass. He went through it. Like, he was hovering. And the minute that we had our serving, I think, you were like, all right, pig face, go ahead. And he like,
just
sat down.
Bye. Goodbye.
We came out 20 minutes later.
He's on his ride home right now just enjoying this conversation.
No, and I know exactly what he's doing because he's going to text in or tweet in say... I'm taking the blame because it's Scotty who eats the two or three slices of lasagna.
In defense, exactly. He's going to pass the buck. But everyone knows we love Sean.
He wears it. Yeah, Uncle Shawnee wears it. Dave Pullen in studio with us. Game 4 tonight. Jets and Golden Knights. I was saying yesterday, Pooley, about the Caps in Tampa Bay that the winner of Game 4 wins the series. Whether that's true or not, that was my take. Do you feel that the winner of tonight's game wins the Western Conference Final?
If I were playing and I were the winner of the game, I would say yes. If I were the loser of the game, I'd say not a chance. Like, yeah. I can spin it every which way for home and away and momentum. And I think Winnipeg's going to be fine. I think there's going to be a physical wearing on Vegas that's going to click in. There's a cumulative effect of playing against the Winnipeg Jets. They're big, they're physical, they can skate, and I think you're going to start to get into that in this series.
See, I agree 100%. And we were talking about it before in the 4 o'clock hour. I still believe Winnipeg wins this series. They're a better team on paper. They're a deeper team. The goalie, like the Flower is the difference.
We're watching something special right now. Now, right. Does it have to be that special for them to win? And if it has to be that special, we've seen this happen over the years where a goalie has won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Well, Jiggy even, I mean... He won the Conn Smythe, wasn't it?
He won the Conn Smythe in the year that
they
lost the Cup.
They lost, but
so did Hextall.
Sometimes, yeah, and that was with you, wasn't?
Yes.
But like, there are times where a goalie has a special performance, and he just drags your team into it. And I'm not suggesting that Vegas has been brutal. It's just they know they play with extra confidence, knowing that the Flower is making the saves, all the ones that he should, and the couple that he shouldn't.
Well, he's the guy with the rings, right? If he chose to wear his rings on a given night, one hand is pretty full right now.
Yeah.
Like, if you had a little event and he chose to wear his rings, he'd look pretty loaded up.
Yeah, he's got three.
And so young guys tend to look at something like that.
Did you think the freak out by Paul Maurice was a little ill-advised? Like, is it the time of year?
No, I'm okay with that. He doesn't do it very often. I don't think he does it anywhere near as often as when he was coaching you.
I know, but... It's a contrast from Gerard Gallant, who says, the guys can make mistakes, they just got to know, and you're in the conference finals. I don't know, if you're not motivated, like, what is a coach going to scare you into playing good in the conference finals? What is the motivation of?
Yeah, for some reason that woke them up. They played better after that.
Yeah, but I guess you're right.
To your point, I think Paul Maurice coaches much more like Gerard Gallant now than he did earlier. I think he coaches less now. And I think that's why this is a good series, and I think that's why the Nashville series was good. Although the two games that Laviolette choked his team down on, I think lost the series for him. Because I think, first of all, Ryan Johansson's not going to play defense every night. He's just not. He did it for a couple of games, but that's not the way that team was built to play. They were built to go. And when Laviolette reeled them in, they won the two games on the road in that really defensive style. It wasn't them. And they couldn't sustain it. But I think Paul Maurice lets them play. There were instances through the year where on specific plays where they would try to make plays, he'd say, look, I'm not going to tell a guy what to do in a two-on-one. They're skilled guys. They make plays. You know, and even the Shifley turnover that we give him a lot of grief for in the March So goal,
right?
He's made that play dozens of times this year, that little flop pass over to the side to Wheeler to skate into it. That's been a huge hallmark of their success is just that little chip pass.
Right.
Didn't work that time. McNabb made a heck of a play.
Did you hear the Gerard Gallant quote on player accountability? He spoke this morning. We'll play it for you right now. Gerard Gallant. I just thought, and we talked about this in the last hour, this is like progressive stuff. I've never heard a National Hockey League coach talk like this publicly.
Well, you take responsibility, but again, it's a game of mistakes. You're not going to be perfect every time you're on the ice. So when the mistakes happen, you forget about them and you move on. So everybody's going to make mistakes. You can go over that game, and there's not one player on the ice that didn't make mistakes last night. So, like I said, they'll own on to the mistakes, but they don't have to. That's part of our game. You make mistakes, you move on, you play the next shift, and you hope you make some good plays. So but those guys are accountable guys, and they work hard. And I said, they don't got to apologize to me. They just got to go out and they'll play their game and get better every shift you can do.
Today with a lot of the coaches than you'd think. You know, I think
a lot
that's
to
the
do
way,
with the players are the how they are too.
Yeah, I think that's the way Coop coaches. I think that's the way a lot of guys do coach now, the successful guys. I think that's the way Joel Quenneville coaches. Would know Q, Joel better than anybody. I mean,
yeah,
that's
Q
been
does,
his success.
I mean, Q gets, as we've all seen on the bench, he gets a little wound up sometimes. He had the crotch grab and he
with certain guys.
With certain guys. But I was saying Daryl Sutter was an honest coach, but he just had a layer of sarcasm to it that would dig, you know. And
that was his way of keeping you accountable.
It was, but I always respected coaches that were brutally honest because you knew exactly where you stood. I had coaches before that talked out the side of their mouth where you knew they were lying to you. They were trying to sugarcoat it, and, oh, you're a big part of this team, but I'm not going to start you for the ninth game in a row. Well, okay, I get it. Like, just say, you know what? I'm running with the other guy, and that's fine. Like, you live with it. We're all big boys, but...
But, Jamie, you were a player who wanted to be like that. There are guys that want to be sugarcoated. They want...
Yes.
They want that. They need that for their psyche, so they can turn around and tell somebody else that.
But today's athlete, and what O was talking about, these guys are... They want information. They want, like, okay, we're doing this. Okay, why are we doing this?
Yeah, like can you imagine back in the day us asking one of our coaches, why are we doing this drill?
Yeah.
Like, I think a teammate would have punched you in the face.
That'd be a great question for Mike Keane.
I was just going to ask
Mike,
you.
Why are we doing this, Mike?
Oh, my God.
In front of everybody, that'd be great.
I think Pat Quinn would have fought you if you said, Pat, why are we doing this?
Yeah, there is, and that's that. There is a
shed show.
There is a cutoff. Exactly. There is a cutoff to where the old school and the new school have come in, and that's why I try not to think of it, because you know it's just a different game. It's just the there are players that I talk to right now and even recently that love the game and think it's at an all-time high as far as speed and skill, but don't like the game the way that it's policed or the way that it's played, in essence, because the accountability isn't there. You know, when Marchand's licking people and kissing people and stuff, like, players I talked to and played with are like, yeah, good punch to the face can sort that out
by his own teammate.
Right, you know. Like,
I've seen teammates punch each other in the face during a game.
I've seen practice, but I haven't seen during the game.
Arguing over who got an assist, and it was just like shut the F up and play. It's just crazy.
But
I had a teammate who was annoyed at a pass in warm up break his teammate's hand.
Ooh.
Just with a little slash in warm up.
Jeez. And
just a little two
hand
in a two on one drill in warm up.
Because there's idiots that think it's funny to shoot pucks and hit guys in the ankle when you're skating around when you first get out there, and I hated that. And Eric Cole hit me in the ankle. One got away from him.
This is his teammate.
Yes.
Yeah, it skipped up on him.
Yeah, and I grabbed a puck, and he wasn't looking, and I took a slap shot. He was at the far end of the ice. And it just sailed over his head. And it was one of those moments where you freak out, and I thought to myself...
Halfway there, when the puck was halfway there?
Halfway there, I'm like, oh, God.
This hits him.
Like, this hits him, I'm done.
Yeah. This hits him, I'm up on the first line.
Yeah.
Stamkos took one in the grill.
Warm up off the face.
Yeah, I mean,
we like I always
more dangerous out there in warm up than it is during a game
because there's 50 pucks and guys are firing them off the crossbar. They're firing them off. I played with Pierre Turgeon on the island. Ray was part of this team as well. And Travis Green fired a snapshot. You know, you go through the, I guess, what is it called?
The half, the little starting drill.
Yeah, you're going down the middle and you cut to the outside. And he's a right-handed shot, fired it off the crossbar, and Turgeon was on the other side. It hit him in the cheek, and he was out for, I think, 5 weeks. Broke his cheekbone. Now, he wasn't wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
And
nobody was.
Nobody wore a helmet back then. Even the backup goal, I would go out with no helmet. I don't know why. I wore no helmet.
That was your FaceTime.
Yeah, you get out there.
I have no idea how a guy doesn't wear, you wear a helmet in warm-up?
Not a chance.
That was the greatest thing about playing in the NHL. I'm like, I swear, like the money, everything else, I wanted to skate around with no helmet.
Your first game in Maple Leaf Gardens, you grew up in Toronto wheeling around with no helmet out there?
Pooley, do you remember Mark Jansen?
Yeah, yes. I remember Janner, yeah.
I said to him, my very first exhibition game, I go, it's cool when I don't have to wear my helmet. He goes, you're kind of young. He goes, you should probably wear your helmet. I go, I'm sorry. I'm not doing it. I don't even know why I asked you for
You had the good flow. I saw the draft picture, the good flow going.
It was the greatest thing to skate with no helmet.
It was like free. It was like
big leagues. Yeah, everyone's watching everybody.
We all had a routine. I used to put my mask with the trainer on the bench. Boards. Go for a couple whirls. Stretch at center ice. Grab the mask.
And handle the puck a little bit. The goalie.
Yeah, you're an idiot looking back on it because the danger factor. There's not just one puck. There's 50 pucks. And as smart as you think some players are, there's as few dummies out there too that have no idea where guys are and they rattle it off the bar. And
then
it goes
you get
off the
odd guy that would skate behind the net.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah,
I've hit a few guys behind the net.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have.
The worst Pooley is Stephen Rice was scratched for 20 games in a row. Paul Maurice says, you're in. You're finally in.
Took him out in warm-up?
No, took himself out. Flies down the middle and rips one off the crossbar right back in the forehead concussion. Everyone was like, man,
can't help yourself.
And it was another Ivy League student from Brown University, so that shows you what that gets you.
Yeah, that cost him another 15 or 20. Then he was going to come back again. He says, you're in. Rice, you're in. He decides to wrestle with Stu Grimson in the locker room.
Smart move.
Blows his neck out. Stu, puts him in a figure four hold, and he just... Yeah. It was incredible. It's like, don't do that.
Great what you remember about Stephen Rice.
Yeah.
He was a pretty good player. He was a great guy, too.
Pretty good Kitchener speed. Rangers, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Way he back was in
right-handed
the day.
Shot, good speed down the wall, could shoot the puck. Like I always remember players by the way that they shot and, you know, how they approached the net. If they were a goal scorer, if they weren't, regardless whether at the AHL level or the NHL level, that on my pre-scout, I would always make mental notes about certain players. And that's what I still to this day, when people say a name, I will associate left-handed shot.
Snapshot.
You know, what does he like to do? That was our pre-scout back then, is you watched a lot of hockey and you would kind of formulate your opinion on what a player was because of things that you'd seen either in highlights or playing against them, and you make a mental note like, well, that guy likes to make that move. You better be aware of that next time. And Stephen Rice was a good skater. He played for the Rangers too. Did he not? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember. Oh, got him traded.
Yeah. I think he got himself traded after all that.
Sounds like it.
Pooley, with the Caps and Lightning, it's like, there's a checklist of demons that Washington has to get through. Pittsburgh and Sid, done. Now it feels like, all right, you go on the road, you steal home ice advantage away, two games worth of it. You outplay Tampa Bay last night, but you still lose. You've given it right back. You're still very much in the series. It's now a best of three. You have to win another one down in Tampa, and you've got to take care of home ice, presumably. And I'm watching Ovi slam his stick over the crossbar at the end of the game last night, and I'm thinking to myself, is that a moment of frustration there, or is there doubt just given that team's history?
I think it's a moment of frustration, I do. I mean, those two guys, he and Kuznetsov, had 21 shots in the third game on net, 12 and 9. Like, that's crazy. It's not what Washington is not doing. They've been just fine. It's what Vasilevsky is doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been beaten twice by a goaltender.
First star both games.
That's it. That's what they've got to tell themselves. And by the way, that guy wasn't very good through the latter part of the year. And, you know, and their goalie is exactly the same. Braden Holtby, you could draw a similarity between those two guys. They both struggled down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But Vasilevsky had such a huge first half that he was still a Vezina finalist just off the strength of probably the first three quarters of the season. And just as, you know, as Holtby bounced back, Vasilevsky's clearly bounced back right now. He wasn't thoroughly tested in the first, maybe the first round against Jersey, but he's been really, really good. They'd just say, hey, keep going. Keep going. Yeah. They've got the goalposts. They've got, you know, he made a couple of ridiculous saves last night.
He did.
It's going to happen.
There was, in game three, he makes a 3-on-1 save on Kuznetsov where Ovi puts it between his legs. I thought that was the difference in the game. Last night, they pushed, and they pushed, and I felt their specialty, their power play needed to score one. You get four power plays in a row.
And with Backstrom back, did they relax just that little bit?
I thought there was. Like, he didn't look as sharp. There were a couple times where I think he was trying to force feed things. Their power play's really good. I felt like it looked really forced yesterday. They were trying to force the puck in the middle to Oshie, and Tampa did a good job of closing that off. Then
don't forget, you're four games in now, so you've seen the same power play four times, and the penalty killers tighten up a little bit and focus on.
And then they're trying to force feed it to Ovi. Like I felt like, I mean, Tampa had a plan in place, and they were able to execute it immediately. Like Point gets it over to Stamkos, even though it hits a skate the first time, and he's still able to get it over there back of the net. There was a plan in place. The Capitals, I think there was, and you made a point about this the other day, Pooley, where you have consecutive power plays. Like, you don't have time to readjust.
If it's within a period, you can't.
Ovi was out there for 2.5 minutes. He was out for the full power play and extra time afterwards. There was no readjustment.
All right, Pooley. You're on a jet to the peg tomorrow? Is that...
Tomorrow? Nice. Flying on James Duthie's plane. We're to Winnipeg. Yeah, it's great.
Good stuff. We'll catch up next week.
Okay. Have a good weekend.
Dave Poulin, TSN hockey analyst. Bobby Mack in studio in the 6 o'clock hour. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Noodles and the O-Dog. It's Overdrive. TSN 1050. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. We're having a little Jack Astor's, chicken fingers, and nachos today.
Nachos were a little thin. They were good, but not enough.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of
money. You better get a lot of nachos in that to-go, I guess, container.
There are a lot of people here today, too, Noodles.
Exactly.
It's like we kind of got an unfair disadvantage. We have work to do.
Yeah.
We have to stay in our seats.
Well, at least Levine's gone home, so we can. He's not going to eat all of it.
Yeah, King Vulture.
Exactly.
King Vulture
circling
has gone home. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Bobby Mack in studio at about 6:25. We'll get to our Friday 5-pack as well. Overdrive, hour number 3, TSN 1050.